This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. This is Inside Story with Sharmila Ganesan and Lee Chui Lin. Tonight, the floods in Baling and what caused them.
First, villagers in Baling are blaming durian plantations for the floods. So we're going to look into this and try to understand the impact that these plantations have had on our environment and forests. And then the issues behind the way forest land is parceled out and what measures for accountability currently exist.
Tell us, how are you feeling about this? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:08 and this is in the news. It's in all the headlines. Last Monday, Baling was hit by what's being called the worst floods to hit the district in, which is in Qatar. 12 villages were affected, including Kampung Iboy, Kampung Jerai, Kampung Pisang. The floods have claimed so far the lives of 3 people. Meanwhile, over 1,400 residents have had to be evacuated. Just to go through what happened, the rain started at about 4 o'clock on Monday. Several villages were submerged within hours. Muddy waters, fallen trees were swept down from nearby Gunung Inas, and more than 85 houses are believed to have been completely destroyed.
So Gunung Inas is a focal point here, right? Because villagers have told Malaysia Kini that the 52-acre Musang King plantation in Gunung Inas Forest Reserve, which is about a kilometre away from the villages, was the cause of the floods, saying that such extensive life loss and damage had never occurred before the forest was cleared to make way for the plantation, even when there was previously continuous rain for 2 to 3 days. So that's where the villagers are coming from. Now, if we look at Kedah Menteri Besar, Datuk Sri Muhammad Sanusi, he instead attributed the floods to the accumulation of water at Gunung Inas, saying it flows down rapidly at the corner of a steep slope, and that the conclusion was made based on an aerial survey conducted with the police at the mountain area yesterday, and that the dams that were built on the mountain for the plantation project are still intact. There was no burst of the water reservoir, and because that was actually something that was suspected to have triggered the floods. I think it's worth saying that there has been further conversation around the Menteri Besar, particularly in terms of a personal interest in the Musang King Durian Farm project, which is something that he has denied, saying that the project was approved by the previous government and the current administration was focused on finding solutions without pointing fingers. He also said that he would like the public to stop speculating on the cause of the floods and allow authorities to conduct their investigations.
This isn't coming out of nowhere, right? So according to Malaysia Kini, Mohd Sobri Ramli, who is a representative of the Pertubuhan Perlindungan Khazanah Malaysia Kedah, had raised the alarm on the situation as early as 2018. So he basically talked about 3 spots in Kedah, including Gunung Inas Reserve Forest, Rimba Teloi Reserve Forest, as well as Gunung Bongsu Reserve Forest, and called them bombs waiting to explode because of forest clearance in the area. So he had reported the matter to the Department of Environment, referred to a similar incident at Post Dipang near Tapah 20 years ago. He highlighted that the catchment ponds on Gunung Inas basically provide water to 70 villages and 21,000 people, and called on the government to review the Durian Farm project. As I said, that was in 2018. But here we are, right? The floods have happened. Villagers are calling not just for action, but I think calling for attention to the situation. So we are going to be discussing this today. We're going to first look at the environmental factors as well as the impact of this, of the durian plantations. Later, we're going to be talking about accountability. Let us know, how are you feeling about this? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Balming frustrated minds. BFM 89.9.
It's 6:12. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And today we're talking about the Baling floods and specifically calls from the villagers pointing to the durian plantations as being the primary cause. So we're going to try and unpack the environmental impact of what's happened there first. But in the meantime, do keep sending your thoughts our way. You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now is Kyu Jia Yeo, Co-Deputy Chair of the Bar Council Environment and Climate Change Committee. Jia Yeo, thanks for joining us today.
Good evening. Thanks for having me.
So the villagers in Baling are saying that the Musang King Plantation in the Gunung Inas Forest Reserve is the cause of the floods, and that this kind of loss of life and damage to properties hadn't happened prior to the forest being cleared. What did you make of this?
In the limited information that we have got to work with at the moment, I would pay attention to what the villagers are saying. So currently we see reports in the papers of interviews with locals on the chronology of events, right? How developments of plantations have caused rivers to become muddy, where before the river waters would be clear even when it was raining. So I think we need to look into that and what the villagers are claiming to be looking at it seriously. Because I think the point is, what is quite shocking for me is how little useful information has come from the authorities so far.
So what do we know about the impact of forest plantations?
I think forest plantations, if you're talking about the timber production forests, Malaysia has got a pretty robust regime for timber production, right? So in the scheme of our forest preservation conservation framework, we've got this permanent forest reserves, part of which we have our national parks, and then the rest we have them as for production forests. So in that sense, we have a managed and sustainable way in which we exploit, to use that word, exploit our timber. So forest plantations, if done correctly, should be a sustainable way. But here, I think what is of grave concern is, there shouldn't be siltation in the rivers if we are doing our forest management correctly. And the big question is, of course, what is the role of these Musang King plantations on the surrounding areas?
Could you help us understand how this forest land came to be approved for these plantations in the first place?
So there's a lack of information here. So I haven't seen specifics. If we're talking about durian plantations, then within permanent reserve forests, you cannot have agricultural or plantations for certainly not for durians. Yeah, there is. We need to know which areas of land which we say that these water runoffs have come from. I think more transparency and official information need to come. I think I've seen some WhatsApp being circulated, but I think what is lacking is official information that is useful and meaningful to us to make sense of this disaster.
So on that note, we have a WhatsApp from Aaron who says the Kedah government should release all the environmental assessment reports prior to the approval of plantations. And that was actually going to be our next question, which is essentially what kind of impact assessments need to be conducted before approvals go through for projects like this?
Yeah, I totally agree with Aaron's suggestion. I think transparency is something that we really need. To your question, I think anyone who wants to develop land will need to satisfy the authorities. We will need to satisfy the authorities about the potential environmental impacts on the surrounding area. So, of course, there are rules and there are thresholds that your development have to be of certain size before you have these requirements, and also the extent of the what is deemed potential environmental impacts are could also be improved. And also, I think that relationship between, like, if I want to develop my land, who do I owe a relationship with? I think that needs to be broadened in a more holistic way. Here we don't know whether it's a durian plantation or something else, but I think when an environmental disaster like this has occurred, causing the loss of lives and livelihood, then we really must look at what is wrong with our systems for approving want any want anyone, whether it's a business or a residential, what anyone can do with the land, and then before approving these things, so that then when things happen, we can have a line of data that we can then question and ask for accountability.
So there have been concerns raised about the Gunung Inas Reserve, among other spots in Kedah, actually, from as early as 2018. Why wasn't anything done?
Yeah, so now that I'm reading about that, villagers have actually been consistently protesting about the earlier Musang King plantations and other kinds of developments. And I think what we're seeing is a pattern again of the absence of grievance mechanisms in across our government agencies, right? So when interviewed, the villagers would say that they have protested, they have complained. But then what has happened to these complaints? I think grievance mechanisms are really important because they provide important data points from relevant stakeholders to assist decision makers. And then secondly, is there has to be systems for accountability, because decision makers sometimes can be perversely motivated by other things. So an accountability system that works is really important. That means when someone makes a complaint or has a feedback, there should be some sort of independent mechanism as well in the relevant agency that would track that complaint to see whether it's been properly dealt with. And so that's accountability. But of course, we are all familiar with how things here are, and we just know there's lots of room for improvement here.
So whose responsibility should it actually be to monitor the flood risks that can be caused by deforestation? I mean, what mechanisms are there to raise the alarm?
So I think generally for flood risk, I would say it's the Department of Irrigation. But if we're talking about within forest areas, then I think the Department of Forestry in the state will also need to be working hand in hand. Department of Environment, perhaps. But, you know, again, I would say really the whole government needs really to be working together, because we know that floodwaters don't say like, okay, we will stop at this jurisdiction. Right. So it doesn't happen that way. So the authorities really need to work together and to protect people from dying from floods. I think this is shockingly, will I say, negligent, if it is something that could have been prevented. Right. So we hear that, we read that it was an unexpected amount of rainfall. I think this is something that we are worryingly hearing a lot this year. So then what is the expected amount of rainfall? You know, and then so that now that floods are becoming, so that I think floods that take lives away, floods that destroy people's homes and livelihoods are becoming a norm now across many places. I think the duty of care now is really shifting. And so, yeah, so I think whose responsibility I think the leaders really have to take accountability. They have to take responsibility. Yeah, they can't hide behind systems. I don't think that's good enough.
Have we seen similar situations occur elsewhere in the country?
Yeah, so we've seen this in Shah Alam. We've seen this in even Kuala Lumpur, places that shouldn't have never been flooded. We've seen it in Klang. In even back in 2014 in December, we had the devastating floods in Kelantan. So this is not new. And if it is new to the average Malaysian, it shouldn't be new to our policymakers. It shouldn't be new to our folks who are responsible for managing our natural resources, our lands, and our water security. Yeah.
So there have been a couple of responses to this. Let's look at the one from Kedah MB Datuk Sri Muhammad Sanusi, who denied that the plantation was the cause, instead pointing it towards the rain accumulation at the Gunung Inas channel. What did you make of the statement?
Okay, so the earlier statement that he denied that it was a plantation, I think there was also a denial that it was active logging in the area. So the first thing is, why are you on the back? Why are you denying, right? So instead, in a functioning state, the authorities should be coming forward to support the people, to support the communities by saying, this is what has happened. This is what we're still trying to figure out. And this is our plan of action. And we will come back to you at 6 o'clock with more information, right? So that should be the kind of support that we would reasonably expect. Instead, what we've got is on the other end of the spectrum, which is, no, the allegations are not true. It's not because of this. It's not because of that. And then that's it. So then we've got this second recent statement to say from the MB that said that based on his one helicopter ride and from what he saw, he thinks that this was the cause of the floods. Or that's what the report seemed to have said. So what about the departments? What about the Department of Irrigation? What about what have the Department of Forestry, what have they been doing in terms of managing rain, in terms of managing the rivers, in terms of managing our water catchment areas and our forests and our biodiversity and these things? Don't they have data to assist our MB and other leaders to make sense of what has happened? I think this is really what I'm talking about when we deserve meaningful information, relevant information, when something like this has happened. Because people need to know, because your statement is, the statement of the state government need to be useful so that people can know what has happened. Why has their family members, their relatives, their friends perished in the flood? Why have their homes been washed away? Their farmlands and the things that they work on have been destroyed. Why has this happened? Who is responsible? How are we going to fix this? And then only we will know it is safe for us to go back to where our homes used to be, right? So how do we get back and how can we feel safe again? All these are burning questions right now. And I think the state needs to live up to its basic duties to address these issues. So far, I do not think it is good enough. There has been a statement, I see that some projects will be undertaken in the future, flood mitigation, flood prevention projects. Okay, so, but the question is that a solution? Because if we haven't framed the problem, then is that solution that is being proposed going to answer that problem, going to deal with that problem? And so without useful information, how can the villagers, the locals, and how can us, the rest of us as citizens who are concerned about this, be satisfied and understand that this is something that, okay, now we're going to do better? How do we know that? So I think it is not enough. I certainly think it is not enough.
Is there enough of a platform being given to the specific frustrations and experiences of the villagers in Baling? What else can be done here?
I think, I've been saying all this very critical. So at least the media is reporting about it. Of course, to say it is, at least we have a media. So I think that's we need to protect the freedom of the media. We need to protect the freedom of villagers speaking to the media and bringing up these issues. Now, what happens next is, I think is that leaders should, if they have any sense of responsibility and decency, then I think leaders need to resign when they have been sleeping at their job. That's really important. And in that sense, I think people should expect that leaders who do not perform, who have messed up, they should resign, because these are public offices, right, of public interest. Public interest means it touches the interest of everyone, whether you're a banker, you're a student, you're a farmer, you're a nurse, you're a policeman. It's public interest. It touches everyone. So if you are not competent enough, if your interest is not there, you are busy with something else, then you should resign. And someone else should lead, because there are civil servants who are doing their job. But you need to lead, and that's the problem here. I think it's a vacuum, it seems to be, because from the absence of useful information, the absence of rational analyses that we have seen that we can see in the public domain. Now it's been a good few days since this disaster. It's as if we are just waking up to these things every time it happens. So I don't think this is right, not for a country that has one of the largest public servant to citizen ratio in the world.
Jayo, thanks for speaking with us today.
Thanks for having me.
That was Kew Jiayo, co-deputy chair of the Bar Council Environment and Climate Change Committee, weighing in on the floods in Baling, specifically about complaints from villagers that they're being caused by the durian plantations. So let us know how you're feeling about this. You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be looking at the question of accountability. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
It's 6:37. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And today we are speaking about the floods in Baling, specifically the villagers pointing to durian plantations and deforestation in the nearby areas as being the primary cause. So earlier we looked at this from the environmental impact point of view. Now we're going to be talking in a larger sense where the accountability for this lies. And for that, we'll be shortly joined by Ko Yu Ling, political economist at Sergey Nam Advisors. But in the meantime, let us know, how are you feeling about this? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We do have some thoughts on this.
Li Jun says, even more important is who owns the plantations. And this is, in some senses, a perennial question. Every time that there has been a situation like this, the question of economic interest versus environmental and also Malaysian interest, I guess, you know, people who live there, safety, all of that comes up. And then also along with, so who owns this? Who's driving this? So you're right. And I think, as our first guest said, there is a lack of information that has become available. Meanwhile, we also have Munif, who says, like a broken record, I go. Environmental impact assessment, structure plans, various governing bodies. The solutions are there, but the will to enforce them isn't. The will to enforce isn't there because those in power stand to gain from not enforcing said solutions. To really, really make a change, you all need to stop voting based on sentiment.
Nothing much to disagree with there, really. Yes, Munif, I do think that, I mean, there's a whole chain of command that technically should exist when it comes to these things, right? The decision to replace a forest reserve with a reserve with a plantation. And yet, again, there is this sort of opacity to the whole situation. And I agree with our guest that more information does need to be shared with the public. Vinayan says, replacing a forest reserve with a durian plantation is obviously the cause. The same happened earlier due to deforestation at Gunung Jerai.
So not according to the officials, as of now, right? They've asked everybody to stop speculating. They've said that there are other reasons for this. But I think we've seen a lot of these sorts of reactions. Vinayan, you're definitely not alone in this. And I think it comes down to exactly that comparison to Gunung Jerai. Having seen it in the past, having seen a similar situation cause a similar effect. And that's where we're at.
Keep those thoughts coming. How are you feeling about the situation at Baling? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And now we're going to be discussing accountability. And for that, we are joined by Ko Yu Ling, political economist at Sergey and Nam Advisors. Yu Ling, always a pleasure to have you with us.
Hi, Sharmila. Hi, Lynn.
So we've been talking about the issue of villagers saying that the durian plantation in Gunung Inas is the cause of the floods that happened recently. What can you tell us about the increasing investment in durian plantations here in Malaysia?
Well, you know, in general, durian's prices have just skyrocketed over the last 10 years or so because of the Chinese market. And so there was a great deal of enthusiasm for several years with this price increase and this huge market demand. I mean, there's been a lot of news about Malaysia getting access to that market, which Thailand has essentially been the key supplier to. And of course, we saw for several years as well, all palm prices, I know they were at sky high prices very recently, it's corrected. But, you know, for several years, palm oil prices weren't that great either. So there was a lot of enthusiasm from other planters as well to convert some areas into durian. So, yep, new areas and existing areas, more durians.
And as we talk about areas, where are we seeing this happen the most?
Well, admittedly, I don't have the statistics at hand, but if we look at the oil palm planters talk about doing it, this could be all over the place. But then if we look at major projects, I think Kelantan, Kedah, Johor, there have been a news flow about them, about major projects of hundreds, if not thousands, of acres or hectares coming up. And of course, Pahang, where there's been this durian marketing centralization sort of controversy going on.
What are the factors that have led to these areas or specific states seeing more forest land being parceled out for plantations?
Well, you know, plantations is one of those things where the major land use change is significant, because what usually happens first is there's logging and there's less impact from that. But I think as the state and, in fact, politicians are looking for more money and funding, they've gotten into more intrusive activities. So, you know, other than plantations, there's also sand and mineral and mining. So there's a lot of that going on uplands as well, sand mining, and that's been an issue. And of course, plantation development is one thing, but there's also something called forest development now, where you can, you know, I think when we talk about plantation, you might think about forest being taken out for palm oil or something like that. But there's also forest development where you can replace, you know, natural species for other cultivated species. So there's that going on, because quite often they're saying that because the forest concessions are not earning enough, they're allowing pockets of oil palm as well. So there's various permutations going on. It's a bit confusing because states have their own policies, and obviously Peninsula is one area, but Sabah and Sarawak have their own approach as well. But there's this general tendency to be more intrusive because people are seeking more revenues.
With that in mind then, and considering the varied reasons why people might be looking to use land or use land in particular ways, what is the typical process involved in issuing approvals for land use in this manner?
I think I'll probably have to refer you to a forestry and permit specialist on that one. But I think from an economic viewpoint, if I may comment, if I look at the parties who are involved in deals, we can clearly see that there are state GLCs. There's Menteri Besar Incorporated, or MBI. Every state, I guess every state has one by now. And then there are state foundations. There's also non-state yayasans or foundations who are clearly involved in a lot of land deals. And if you look at the personnel who are involved, obviously politicians hold a great deal of sway on these. I mean, I think they have relied on concessionaires and other developers for funding. And I think more than one politician has said in the headlines that political donations are legitimate. So, you know, they obviously have clearly openly said that sort of thing. But, you know, I think if we start as an example, this is just anecdotal thing, but, you know, you could have a project that starts off with a subsidiary of a Menteri Besar Incorporated. But then, you know, several years later, we find out that it's in private hands. So I think what we really need is a public registry of all these land deals when they're happening. But, you know, so many things are sulit or secret in Malaysia. When are we going to have openness on this?
So typically, how much community buy-in is required or even worked towards prior to these approvals being granted?
That's a good question. I mean, I think there has to be a public sort of a declaration of projects going on. But then I suppose the issue is whether the local community was very well engaged or informed on it. And I think there could be a variation on that. You know, and in fact, a lot of the upland farming projects, which, you know, Malaysia has run out of land, right? Which is why we're finding out that a lot of the newer projects are in these upland areas, and therefore, you know, people have been accusing them when the floods happen. But, you know, we have Ladang Rakyat kind of projects. Ironically, it may not end up with the people. You know, we see in chat groups that, for example, a rubber project to help the local community might be taken back from them. It becomes a durian project. Then the next political party comes in, it becomes an even bigger project. And the one who helped the people campaign against it, there's a lot of politicians helping people campaign against it. But then when they come into power, they seem to, you know, have the project continue and maybe even expand the project. So this is the real irony of what we're seeing, of what's going on. But, you know, if we go by so-called Western standards, there's something that they advocate called FPIC, free, prior and informed consent. You really have to let people know and understand what's going on. But, you know, even if this is done, we've seen so many cases about project developers get an agreement from community leaders. And then a few years later, you find out that the wider community didn't benefit, and the leaders had just basically spent their money on a truck and crashed it a couple of weeks later. So many issues with, you know, getting community engagement and approval.
We're speaking with Koh Yew Ling of Sagianam Advisors about the Baling floods, but in a more specific sense, the process by which these the land nearby was approved for plantations, as well as where the accountability there lies. Do continue sending your thoughts our way. You can call 777-332-900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll continue our conversation with Yew Ling after this, so keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Break from mediocrity. BFM 89.9.
It's 6:48. You're listening to Inside Story with Charmila and Lynn, and we're continuing our conversation on the Baling floods, specifically when it comes to the question of accountability. Do keep sending your thoughts our way. How are you feeling about this? You can call 777-332-900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We are speaking with Koh Yew Ling, political economist at Sagianam Advisors. Yew Ling, to pick up where we left off, when disasters like these occur, how much liability are the private companies involved held to?
I'm not familiar with cases on the Malaysia side so much. Maybe these are going to come up, I don't know. But, you know, if we look a bit wider, I mean, you know, the words that kind of pop up are like dereliction of public duty, conflict of interest, negligence. I mean, when there was a leak of in California, a gas leak, I mean, you know, the company had to pay a fine. They had to, pay for people to be relocated and all sorts of things, you know, when a company is found to have done an environmental this sort of problem, crisis happening.
And what about the government, both at the state and federal levels?
Well, I think this is where the state is often pushing for development. They're looking for revenue, whether it's for the state coffers or whether it just ends up in Menteri Bursa Incorporated and Yayasans, which we can't account for, which is also a problem in and of itself. But, you know, when the state pushes for development, and then we later see blame games happening, right? They'll say that, oh, flood and irrigation, which is a federal thing, didn't backstop them. But I'm just wondering how well did they communicate in the first instance when you have to do this? And then, of course, if we look a little bit ahead of time as well, I mean, climate change, I mean, the kind of floods that we're seeing due to these heavy rains, which are becoming so regular. What about our coastal protection? Where's all the money for these things going to happen?
So this is a conversation that inevitably recurs when we talk about increasing income from our agriculture sector because of this need for land. How can we better balance the potential of the industry, particularly as new opportunities come up, while also accounting for the health of the environment?
Well, I think what's happening on Malaysia side is that, you know, when new opportunities come in, because we don't seem to have a very firm stance on not developing forest areas. There's flexibility, you can reallocate areas, shift it here and there. Then this gives a lot of opportunities for project developers to go and lobby and say, look, I want a nice big piece of land. And that seems to be an ongoing thing now, right, clearly. And, you know, everyone has their EIA. Everyone has an EIA. So what does it mean? I mean, I guess the question is, do we have landscape planning?
So with that in mind and bearing, I suppose, you know, on top of our conversation, building on that, what kinds of reforms or further pathways for accountability would you like to see in our country?
Well, I think from this really tragic and shocking, deaths from the floods, I think, you know, you just Google it, right? You already know that people were complaining about it in 2019. Right. And we look at, even, you know, the news flow on it. It basically went through every coalition of political party. Everyone just continued it, expanded it. And then the local people who already knew of the flood risks and problems in 2019, when Pakatan Harapan was in power already, the big reform government. I mean, what happened? Right. 2022, we have these deaths. I mean, it's just shocking. It's just so upsetting. I don't know what to say. I mean, I think we just need transparency. They need to tell us what these land developments are, who is doing it. Is the state gaining? Because they keep putting up their hand and saying, oh, it's for the state coffers, right? But where is this money, right? And where are the local community benefiting? I mean, I did a quick look in 2018 and we interviewed, not NGOs, by the way, but professionals. And and bureaucrats. And they were doubtful that a lot of economic developments were for the socioeconomic good of the people, and that environmental problems were worse than expected. And this is not the NGO people talking about it. And fast forward to today, people are dying, literally. Where's the wake up on this?
Yuling, what would you like to leave us with?
Please remove this culture of Sulit. Please have a public registry of all these things happening so that people can comment. Please help have this benefit the people. This revolving door of politicians, political parties, they're all just expanding projects. There is no stop to it. I think people just have to stand up for their rights.
Yuling, thanks for speaking with us today.
Thank you.
That was Ko Yuling, political economist from Sigi and Nam Advisors, helping us understand, I think, the kind of accountability we need rather than have when it comes to situations like the tragic Baling floods. Do keep those thoughts coming. How are you feeling about this? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We do have this message from Chris.
Crispy bacon, actually. I want to give full credit to this sort of very Bart Simpson-esque pseudonym. So Chris says, whatever laws, checks and balances and environmental guidelines are sidestepped when people in power want things their way. You help me, I help you is only lucrative for a select few. The rakyat generally just have to accept the negative impacts later on as a fact of life.
And, you know, when we see things like the floods happen, those aren't just minor impacts. Those are huge, life-changing things. And again, I go back to what both our guests have highlighted, the fact that we need so much more transparency, the fact that we actually need people to take responsibility when something like this happens, right? Do keep those thoughts coming. You can call us, WhatsApp us, tweet us. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.